That's Dr. Drew, phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Dr. Drew, board-certified physician, addiction medicine specialist. Tonight, we're going commercial-free.
Amazing. That means pee-free, too, doesn't it?
That's the last thing I said to Drew before we went on the air. How am I going to take a leak if we're going commercial-free? And do we get paid extra? Well, these are all things we can explore, I guess, after the show.
Yeah.
Unless you want to just use these mics like an intercom system like we normally do. Hey, Drew, you got to go potty? Okay. So tonight, obviously, on the anniversary of 9-11, which sounds kind of redundant because it's 9-11, but 9-11-01, yeah. We're dedicating tonight's show to that, thoughts you have of that, the memory of those who perished in that attack. And any feelings that you might have surrounding it, but probably with a little more of a Loveline flavor to it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Our audience is probably a little younger than most talk show audiences, certainly anyone I'm familiar with. And our show's a little more about feelings and a little less about politics. So that might be the direction that we'll take.
And relationships and how that they've been affected.
Yeah, now I've been... I think everybody in America has had an asshole of 9-11 personally, and we're just sort of piling on here at the end of the day.
I think people started not wanting to hear about it. Not because they're a-holes, but because it's hard to go back. It's too painful. Like, hey, I don't want my life back. No, I don't want to go through that again.
Yeah? Do people think that way?
I'm looking at the board here already. They're called young people in particular. It's like, oh, yeah, like stop, enough. You know?
Well, as I was driving in at 9:53, I was thinking, and by the way, you know you're a bad and irresponsible host when you park your car, climb out of your car, take one step onto the sidewalk, the security guard says, hey, your car's hanging into the driveway in front of you. You stop and look at the car and think, geez, I'm going to be late if I walk back to it and move it 4 feet back.
And you move it.
Yeah, but probably not a great sign that you haven't given yourself enough time to walk 8 feet back to your car and roll it 4 feet backward.
Good time.
I was considering it through a wrench in my gears. But I was thinking as I was driving in that people have been hearing about this all day. And we are doing our show at the end of the day on a day that people have had an earful full of this. And also, I should say to those of you who are listening on the East Coast, and places in the Midwest or east of the Mississippi, that obviously this show is a day delay. So if you're hearing it right now and you think we think it's 9-11 today, we don't. Right, Drew?
What about you? But okay, yeah.
Yes, yeah. You'll have to bear with us. But so we'd like to talk about it tonight, but probably in a little differently than you'd hear about it on other shows, if that's possible. And a lot of that's going to be up to you. Whatever your questions and comments are, is the direction we'll go.
Like with anything about the human experience, it doesn't have to be solemn. I did Kilborn tonight, and we had fun with it a little bit, too. And it was,
you did?
Yeah, so you can hear me and watch me at the end of 9-11.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
All right, what are your thoughts, Drew?
I started the day, interestingly, picking up the New York Times, and there's sort of a review section, and there was this picture of a kid's sort of mantle, this young girl's mantle, showed her soccer trophies and some, you know, things of her activities, sort of her life portrayed through these little awards and things. And right in the middle of it was a memorial to her dad. And it was too painful. It really hurt me. I started crying. So it was just, you know, trying to hide that from my kids and let them get all upset about it. And then, right then I thought, oh, my God, I just don't want to go back to this. I don't want to revisit this. And then at the same time, I was shocked at how much I'd just been in total denial, forgotten what it felt like a year ago. You know, I really hadn't thought about it. I was in Cuba 2 months later. You know what I mean? It was a total, meh, oh, well, here we go, all of our life. I mean, think about how we just moved right on.
Yeah.
It was what we wanted to do. We all said we were going to do it, but, man, we just left it behind.
Well, I think for those who don't want to leave it behind, there's nothing you can do to advance them. And for people who do move forward, there's nothing that can stop them. You know what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying, but I thought that it would stay with me and I would move forward.
Right.
But I just left it behind. I forgot what it felt like.
That's good, right?
I feel guilty? I feel guilty, and I feel like it. The clarity I had that couple of months when I was stockpiling water and buying a generator for the house and stuff.
Yeah.
That clarity, it's nice to get a glimpse of that again.
And
kind of touch that.
And what about, let's say, having kids yourself?
Yeah.
I mean, you saw the paper of the child who lost her father, the memorial that was on the mantle.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you didn't have kids, do you think you would have had that emotional reaction to it?
I would have to that particular thing. It just seems so human, you know, such a...
Right.
Somebody's young life just carved out because of this thing. But having kids made those months after 9/11/01 unbearable. And the anxiety of what the hell's coming next in the history of this whole process is, again, just a source of huge anxiety for me. So this time around, we were able to sort of dose in more to the kids. I mean, it was interesting watching them tonight watch some stuff and thinking, oh, God, look at that. They were watching some of the footage of the World Trade Center, and you would have thought they hadn't seen it before, the way they were reacting to it.
Right.
It's like, oh, my God, there's a big building going. Oh, whoa, look at those pictures. And they were sitting there when it happened.
Yeah.
Watching it, too.
What do you think the effect on the kids who lost their mother or father to this event, what do you think the psychological effects of them would be, as opposed to a lot of the people that we talk to on this show that may have lost their parents, the drugs, for instance, or just abandonment?
Right.
I somehow feel that these kids are going to come out better than those people.
Well, if someone, like... Throughout human history, children have been losing fathers to war and things like that.
Right.
And the end of war and peace is this one kid who lost a main character was his father in the war, and how they idealize the father. The father becomes a better father in memoriam than he was as a real person. And so it becomes an internalized object that is very idealized. And it can disconnect someone from reality a little bit, but it can be a source of strength and positive values and things. You live a life on behalf of someone that died, as opposed to some effed up drug addict that leaves you behind.
You can't
find any way to make meaning of that and a way to feel good about it for yourself, because you feel like you caused that too.
Yeah, your parent becomes like a deity. I mean, they become, you know, the people talk, I believe he's watching out for me, he's looking over me, I could feel him with me, you know, when I graduated high school, and then when I got married, when I had my first child. You know that kind
of
talk?
They live a life on behalf of.
Suppose our listeners whose dad is boozing it up and living in Florida and banging strippers, that's probably worse. I mean, better they would have went as a war hero or one of the firemen or paramedics or whoever rushed into one of the trade centers.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You want to take some calls?
Sure. Let's take a typical one first. It would be six.
Typical.
In that she's feeling the way pretty much everyone I've talked to her age.
Yeah. And what do you think before we go to the phones here, Drew?
We got a lot of time here tonight, Adam. Just take your time.
I'm going to do the dreidel song from, about 10:40 to about 11:15.
Good times, yeah.
I figured out I can do it like 100 bottles of beer on the wall. I can start at 99 dreidels and just keep going.
How about do a montage, a dreidel no cannot have songs?
Dreidel, no, cannot have. I made it out of glass. No, cannot have. And when it's dry, no, will not be dry. And dreidel, that one?
I want you to know, I was at a Mediterranean restaurant about a week ago while you were in Europe enjoying yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And the waiter brought me some complimentary desserts at the end and leaned over and went, I love your show and everything. But how about telling Adam a little less that no cannot have song?
I'm just telling you, those folks like saying no. That's not a critique, just an observation. Some cultures like saying yes, others enjoy saying no.
Certain types in certain...
Yeah, you know what I mean? Mainly that culture. Listen, I'll give you... before the night's over, there's Drew whacking the mic with his coffee mug. I'll give my breeds of people and breeds of dog speech before we get too gushy. But... what was I saying, Drew? What do you think? As far as terrorists go, I mean, Drew's a guy. Drew is, I don't want to call him a puss, but he's a coward. No, Drew's concerned. He looks out for himself. He looks out for his family. And he's definitely one of these people who will react to things and who will sort of, I don't want to say play into the terrorist hands, but if you want to create some concern, Drew's a good guy to be concerned.
Well, and then my reaction last time, although, you know, anxious and all that stuff.
Yes.
Was, and remains kind of like, bring it on.
Well, yeah.
Bring it on. Let's go.
You were anxious.
Oh, yeah.
I wasn't anxious. I don't know why I wasn't anxious. I'm an atheist, and I'm just sort of an odds guy.
I wasn't afraid, in the sense that I wasn't fearful of, I was anxious about, it was sort of like a vigilance, like what the hell's going to go on.
Well, you feel, I think you felt like you had to do something.
Yeah.
Drew, you're a guy who feels like you have to do something, and I feel like I have to do something too if you count napping and masturbation as doing something.
You count.
But we all grieve in our own ways.
Yes, yes.
But the point is I'm asking you, what your fear is now, or not your fear, but what your best guess is as to what's next, if there is a next. And we're all assuming there's a next.
You know, I've learned not to do that. Now, that's one thing I did learn, because I was guessing all the time 6 months ago, or a year ago.
Yes.
And that was just wrong.
Right.
I do not know. And all you can do is go on with your life and just keep your priorities in line. I really think that there is a time now. I mean, this is time for two things. Leadership, and a word I'm going to use that's been overused a lot lately, and heroism. By leadership, I mean people like you and I that have, you know, are getting in front of people. It's time to, I mean, if the bullets started whizzing tonight, I still think we got to, you know, climb into this booth and talk and come in, you know, get our ass in here every night and, you know, be there for people.
Speaking of whizzing, by the way, you got to go yet?
No, yeah, I will, sir.
Okay, go ahead.
How can we go without going together, though? It's going to be weird.
We just get like 80 foot of mic cord and walk it in the bathroom.
Can you do it?
We usually go together.
Yeah. Who's supposed to fill in for me when I got a good juice?
I can't tinkle without Drew looking at me.
He gets pee shy.
Yeah, we hold hands across the bathroom.
And the other thing, setting up the heroism thing.
Yeah.
Not heroism in the way that sort of Top Gun heroism, the sort of childlike, attention-getting heroism.
Yeah.
I mean heroism where people just stand up and do what's right all the time now.
Right.
It's time to just do what's right and then let the cards fall. You see what I'm saying?
You mean do what's right in your everyday life?
That, whatever. It's time to start F, you know, keep your priorities right. Don't F around. You know, don't F up.
Right. Like, for instance, let's not occupy the cops with your own personal domestic squabbles, right, for instance, and leave them alone to sort of stop actual potential terrorist attacks and criminals.
You know, here's
and
a better way. Stuff. It's time to stopping children to be men. You know what I'm saying?
That's good.
That's what I'm saying. And I sort of came to that thing. I realized this book I wrote was about that, which was fascinating, that's what it was for me. So when the book comes out, you can read it.
When's that coming out?
April.
I'm not going to read it, but...
You should.
I would like you to read it and just kind of give me the beats.
Okay.
Give me an overview.
Yeah, I will.
I just don't read. Right?
I know that.
Nothing personal.
I'll read it on the cassettes, and I'll give it to you.
Who's going to narrate?
Me.
Oh, no. I want to like James Earl Jones to narrate.
All right, James Earl Jones or Jenna Elfman.
Okay. She's a talent. Should we get to the phones now?
Let's do it.
All right.
Isn't this fun? Just ramble on a little bit?
Yeah, it is. We've never done it. We do it every night.
Like, not like this.
Well, that's true. I know. It feels like some sort of a telethon.
Yeah.
And we have to kill 2 hours. But
we're cutting 12 minutes out of the show. We're behaving like it's an extra hour.
Right. Well, let me... Oh, you mean worth a commercial?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm trying to think... I know a lot of people are sitting around and sort of waiting for something to happen from a terrorist standpoint. And like a lot of people thinking, oh, they're going to do something on 4th of July.
Mm.
They're going to do something on the anniversary of 9/11. Bracing themselves during the times they would expect this to happen.
That's a mistake, I think.
I think that's a huge mistake.
I think they're going to do something, but it's not going to be when we expect it. Why would they? These are not stupid people. We want to think they're stupid. They ain't stupid.
Well, what we want to think is that their vengeance transcends stupidity.
But that they don't understand us and our vigilance and stuff. And no.
No, I don't. Here's what I mean is they would probably, if they could do the same amount of destruction on a day that was significant to us, like 4th of July, Christmas, or an anniversary of the tragedy, if they could pull that off and be just as effective, and have just as high a percentage of chance of pulling it off on that day, I think they would gladly do it. But I think if they realize that there's a less chance of being effective on that day, even if it's marginal, and their whole thing is wanting to be effective, then they're going to switch to another day.
That's right.
And that's why I'm never really worried about the days they're supposed to do it. I don't think that's the way they operate. And furthermore, there's a lot of interest abroad. I mean, there's a lot of interest that this country has that's not on this soil. There's embassies and installations, war installations, and ships and servicemen and all sorts of stuff spread out all over the world that these guys have focused on in the past that makes big news over here, but it's not the same kind of news that it makes when something happens on our soil. But all that stuff is still open,
mm-hmm.
is still a target. And, all right, Drew, let's get to the phones. Where do you want to go, to?
Six.
Brody.
Hello.
Turn your radio down.
That's my TV, I'm sorry.
What's happening? 15?
Yes.
Where are you calling from, Oakland?
Mm-hmm.
Will you turn your radio? Hello. Please. Please, on this day of mourning, do not have me start yelling at the first caller, Carl Sandra.
Okay.
All right, is it turned out?
Go, Brody.
Yes. Okay, my question is, but is it okay if you're, like, tired of hearing about it, about...
Oh, my God. Like, first call of the night.
Smoke detector, huh?
Brody, did you hear that little chirping sound?
You can hear it.
We're just glad to know that you can hear it. TV is still on, too.
Yeah. I hear it.
All right, Brody. Don't talk for just one moment, please.
Hang on. Oh, she turned the TV down.
Oh, she turned the TV down.
Yeah.
Huh?
Not all the way, but turned it down.
Hey, Brody?
Mm-hmm.
All right, go ahead.
You're tired of hearing about 9/11.
Yes, and also, no, is it okay?
Most people... There we go again. How do you live with that thing chirping in the background? It's hard to have
You sort of just learn to tune in.
Oh, there's one in another room going off. Did you hear that?
You can hear.
You've got two separate smoke detectors that are low on batteries?
There's like one in each room.
And they're all chirping?
Yeah.
Hold on a second.
Oh, my God.
Sure, I know this is really, it's just not tonight, but I can't help myself. That would bother a reptile. Do you understand? Like, if you had an iguana, it would start freaking out eventually.
Yes. Oh, my God.
If you're a human being who has two smoke detectors that chirp every 35 seconds...
We only heard two. She kind of alluded that maybe there are more.
And you're living with it. Don't you need a PET scan at that point?
Yeah,
I mean, we should be worried that there might be tumors growing in the brain.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes. Hearing testing immediately. Audiologist, brain scan, yes.
I'm not worried about the hearing part. I'm worried about the processing part.
Well, if they hear it, then yes, the processing is a grave concern.
I would think there'd be like a full-sized tumor.
With that chirping, I hear it through my skull.
Yeah, yes, yes. Deaf people can play football because they smack a big drum, and that's how they know when to get off the ball because they can feel the vibrations. And yes, I feel that smoke detector in my testicles. You could take six candles and pour them in each ear, and I would still feel it when it went off. All right, let's get back to Brody. This is why we could never dedicate a show to anything. We really should just dedicate the show to smoke detectors. Brody?
Mm-hmm.
So, before we get to your feelings on 911.
Mm-hmm.
You have two smoke detectors that are chirping.
Two that we've established so far.
Right.
How many actually are going off?
I'm guessing just two. And is one in your room?
Yeah, it's like a couple meters or feet away.
Meters?
No.
What a strange thing for someone who can't change the batteries. Are we talking
she does metric and standard conversion through. She can't change a goddamn 9-volt battery on her smoke detector.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Oh, there it is. That's the other room. That one.
Same room. The other one's distant.
She should be doing
it in the kitchen or something.
Shut the door.
Now that's in your bedroom, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at night,
it keeps going.
You go to bed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, Adam. Think about that. Your neighbor has a leaky faucet, you can't sleep.
No, you know what? I can't turn... I have a noisemaker that used to made the sound of the ocean.
Yes.
And it would put me to sleep, except for it didn't work because I could hear the repetitive rhythm in the wave sounds.
You'd pick up the repair. Yeah. You'd when it would repeat, it'd bother you.
It would bother me, and about every 14 seconds, you could hear it was on a computer chip, and it would come around, and you'd hear the same noise sound that you heard 15 seconds ago, and I started focusing on it, and I couldn't sleep because I was waiting for it to repeat. Yeah. Brody.
Huh?
Yeah, we understand we got a couple hours to kill that. So how long has that thing been chirping?
Since, last year, probably.
Year.
No, it hasn't been a year.
I don't know. I know it's been a long time, but I just don't know how long.
Now, how could she be surprised that we could hear that?
Who do you live with, by the way?
My mom.
And,
Can we get her on the phone?
Yeah. Where is she?
She's asleep.
How could she sleep?
She doesn't have one in her room. But I guess it's the same thing as me. You just sort of learn to tune it out or whatever.
Yeah. I don't know if you learn to as much as you just don't learn to live or something. It just sounds bizarre.
Right.
All right. So listen, Brody, tell me your feelings on this thing.
Okay.
Get over it.
I just feel that, like 2 weeks after it happened, that's where I was like, oh, okay, that's enough. You know, I don't know if it was because all the coverage or what.
That was the other room. You hear that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the way.
I mean, I don't know. Is it, okay? Because I don't want to feel guilty about it.
No.
It's okay. It's okay, Brody. And most people your age reacted that way.
Okay.
Everywhere I've gone in the country, people are just, oh, my God, I want my life back. I can't stand this. Enough, enough, enough. And that I think a lot of people going into today did not want... You have a gun? I'm going
to
kill myself.
It's driving me nuts to smoke detector. I'm 600 miles away.
Here's what I wonder.
No.
Wait, I've got a question.
All right.
We've done this show together for 6 years?
Yes.
How come we've only heard smoke detectors for the last 3 months, given that 20% of our callers have smoke detectors going off next to their bed?
Yes.
How come we've only been hearing it for a couple of months?
Well, first off, I think it's more like 25%.
Yeah.
And secondly, my only guess would be that the batteries were new when we went on the air.
Okay, everybody have them all put it together. Yeah.
And it took 7 years for them to run out.
Okay, got it. All right, good.
That's the average life of a 9-volt smoke detector. I have done some research on this. I have no idea, but I couldn't fathom somebody who would not be deeply, deeply troubled by that thing going off in their room.
I know that if an ant farts in your bedroom, that's it.
Oh, that is it. Even if it's a silent one, and I can just smell that ant gas. Okay, so.
Okay.
Everybody is an asshole of this 911.
But we're going to keep talking about it.
That's right. But hopefully.
I think we have to. We really do. We need to force ourselves to look at this, even though we don't want to. To say enough, and I don't want to do this anymore. Hey, we'll take a break right now. So to say enough. I'm just kidding.
Okay.
To say enough, I don't want to hear this anymore, that would be a normal reaction. But Drew, to then pitch it to that one.
Drew makes 2.5 jokes a year and then is confused when you're confused by one of his jokes.
But you get more than confused. You're like startled. Oh, my God. What?
Well, you say, hey, we got to take a break very casually when in the middle of a conversation. I just assume you think we got to take a break, you know. Hey, Jesse?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you're 23. What's up?
I just wanted to call in and just thank you guys for what you did last year. I'm originally from D.C., and I was out here for college, and I never felt so far away from home, and you guys really were just like parents. You were so reassuring.
Oh, nice. That was a tough night. I think that kind of feeling of connection that we all sort of participated in for the few weeks afterwards has continued on a low level in ways that we're sort of not aware of. We sort of treat each other maybe a little differently, and we tend to, I think particularly people your age, Jesse, are more civil with each other. Their relationships are kind of a little more empathic, or at least trying to be better.
Do you think so?
I do.
I kind of disagree. I think just the attitude around here was just, I just felt kind of like I was really affected, you know.
Where are you, UCLA?
USC. So, and just, you know, by even that day, you know, people were just kind of, doing their thing, and I just really just want to thank you guys for, you know, like, talking about what was going on, allowing people to have a forum to express themselves.
Okay. Yeah. You want to say anything else tonight?
No, that was really, I just, you know, I've been thinking about thanking you guys for a year. I just thought tonight would be a good night.
Your family's still back in D.C.?
Yeah.
Where do they live?
They actually live right outside in Bethesda, Maryland.
Yeah.
That's near the Pentagon, is that?
Naval Hospital.
Yeah, Naval Hospital, that's right.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's in the air, so, you know, today's been kind of a little bit of a worry, but, you know, I felt a little bit closer to home with you guys. I mean, really, you guys are just like father figures.
Thank you.
Come on, Jesse. Take care.
Thanks for calling.
All right, thank you so much.
All right. I remember last year, and I remember us sort of dedicating the first week after the attack on that topic. It just sort of felt natural for both of us, I think, to talk about whatever it is everyone was talking about, whatever was on everyone's minds. Never really felt like anything special.
Right. It's funny being on radio. You do it no matter what, right? You come up here, whatever's going on in the world. You didn't do this with me, but we had that huge earthquake in 91.
Yeah.
We were broadcasting those days from a tall building.
Right.
I had to climb stairs to get up into it because the elevators were all out, lights were all out, and just went up and did it. You know, radio's an interesting. That's one of the things that makes.
94.
Yeah. I beg your pardon. Yes, you're right.
What'd you say, 91?
I said 91. I was thinking of 71, I think, in my head.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know why I went along with your 91
because
either.
71, I think, affected us both. It was more than 94.
You know what it did? You know why? Because 94 was the year I got on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, like, further down the road. I got on the radio, like, 5 months after the earthquake.
Right.
But when you said, yeah, well, you weren't here, but in 94 there was an earthquake.
Yeah.
I had to push it. To me, when you said 91, I wasn't in radio yet, so it seemed like a long time ago, but it was only, I ended up getting into radio a little bit after that. God damn, that earthquake was horrible for me. Old lady's car broke down, lost her job, her mom came to stay with us.
Oh, my God.
Hey, worst real quick, of my life. Before you go to the call?
Yeah.
I got something that Drew said last year on this day, just to kind of maybe help you get back there.
All right.
You're fired up, Drew. You ready?
Oh, no.
Oh, this is the end. This is the end? When the hell is it the right time to ask who did this? I mean, it is going to be an awful catastrophe for the next 10 years. We're going to be mourning forever. Today is the day of shock and asking who the hell did this.
Oh, Drew.
I'm trying to remember what I was reacting to, though. Somebody, what was that?
Somebody saying that it wasn't time to ask who did this.
Yes. I was... It was. I think it was like the Clintons or something. They were getting on going, don't ask about who did this. I got so pissed off.
I think this is out of context. It had to do with the smoke detector. This was from the night before, actually. Drew was pretty fired up about it at the time, I seem to recall.
What do you mean it's not time to ask who did this? What do you mean? What did that mean?
I don't know.
Time to ask who did this.
Please.
Time to stand up and reinstore dominance in this system, for God's sakes.
Of course it is. And the people, I just heard a story tonight about some guy from the Southland who was, his brother was killed. Oh, he was horribly burned and injured. You know, you hear about the people that made it, and you hear about the people that didn't. But you forget about a lot of the people that were just badly injured. I mean, people that are still undergoing painful, costly, lengthy surgeries and repairing burns, and all the firemen that inhaled all the dust and the smoke and the debris, and the people that were just injured. I mean, think of the massive injuries that would happen in a situation like that.
Mm-hmm.
And but this guy's thing was he didn't harbor any animosity, and, you know, he wanted to heal, and he didn't, you know, there's this weird thing. And I don't know if this exists in other cultures, maybe a handful of European cultures, but this whole we're going to forgive our enemy kind of thing, he knows not what he does kind of thing, I don't know. There seems to be a fair amount of that in this country. And I think when you do that, you're being irresponsible. I mean, people do it and they look at themselves as being evolved, but I don't look at it as being evolved. I look at it as if you're not going to punish your enemy, then you're going to give them the opportunity to strike again.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not going to do it now, you're sure as hell not going to do it 5 years from now. Now's the time to do it. And Drew and I haven't had any discussions on Sodom and Iraq and all that kind of stuff. But I'm basically just of the notion that this is the greatest country on the planet. And we do stick our noses.
You like Paris, though.
I like Paris. Yeah. Notre Dame was nice.
Yeah.
And people weren't so bad either.
Yeah.
And the price is reasonable.
Mm.
Not as bad as London. Not as bad. But we get our noses and other. I mean, I think it's really hard. It's really hard. You know, being a country is like being a police department in a sense. You're going to have a couple of bad cops. You're going to have a couple of situations where somebody gets out of line. It's almost impossible to have a spotless record as a country.
Mm-hmm.
That's a given.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is how do you stack up against other countries? Not have you ever made a mistake, but how many mistakes have you made compared to how many other regimes have made mistakes and other countries have made mistakes, and what have you done to rectify them? You know? I mean, yeah, this country interned Japanese during World War II. And everyone, you know, makes a big deal out of that, and I suppose it was a big deal.
Now, let's look at the Khmer Rouge.
Let's look at the Khmer Rouge. Right. These guys are death camps and gulags and mass graves. Mass graves. And, yeah, we were bombed. We were attacked by the Japanese. They tried to take out our old Pacific Fleet.
We freaked out.
And we freaked out, and it was a little different time. And we had a knee-jerk reaction when we literally thought this country was going to lose a major world war. And then we didn't torture them. We didn't beat them. We took them somewhere and we put them somewhere. And then after a relatively short period of time, and I don't mean 6 weeks, but less than the length, I don't know, a couple of years, whatever, the war went on for about 5 years. I don't think they were interned that long. But anyway, we let them out. And then later on down the road, we gave them reparations. Okay, so we made a mistake. We sort of apologized eventually. And then we gave them a few bucks. Okay, that's what good countries do. You can't expect countries not to make mistakes, such as the internment part at the beginning. But the fact that they let everyone go, they say they're sorry, and some years later, they give the people some reparations, that's a halfway decent country. Hey, we should hope that the rest of the countries of the world would do that. And here's the thing. Who would you want your neighbors to be? I mean, would you rather they be like who? You name the country. If you could have a neighbor on this country, I mean, on the borders, who would you want it to be? You want it to be some of these Middle Eastern countries? Who would you like it to be? I mean, I'm tired of this country apologizing for everything. We've made some mistakes. That's true. But who's better than we are? Who? And I think it's all right to notice a difference in countries. There's good and there's bad. Let's face it. I mean, it's like Hitler, bad. Why can't we judge? Certainly we can judge. I mean, I was just in the Holocaust section. I had a whole Holocaust wing in the Imperial War Museum in London a few weeks ago, and and people hear about it, and they talk about it, and they hear some numbers bandied about, and they know about death camps and things like that. But, boy, I mean, if you really saw what went on in regards to the Holocaust, it's mind-boggling. I mean, it's bizarre. It's not only tragic, it's not only sad, but it's bizarre.
It's macabre, yeah.
Yeah, and there's evil out there. And there's nations that... Why you may not want to call Germany evil during that period in time. They were very evil, super evil. And I got some thoughts about us not being done with Germany, by the way.
You're mad since seeing the Imperial War Museum.
Of course. We're done. We're not done with them. They got a lot coming. I'm going to work that out later. I know we're allies now, but that's why it makes it easier to strike.
And by the way, they're not getting behind us.
Yeah, they're not getting behind us. Great, yeah. And anyway, the point is that's evil. And we recognize that. And there's many, many regimes that have been evil over the years. Does it make everyone who lives in that land evil? No. Does it mean you don't have to bomb Germany in 1944? No. You got to do it. Does that mean every peasant farmer that got hit with a two-ton bomb was dropped from a Lancaster or a B-27? It's tragic, but what's the choice? That's what I'm saying. Is Germany evil now? No. Still doesn't mean we can't hit them again. But they're bad regimes in countries, yep. And some of them hang around for a long time. And I have no problem with doing something about it. Filbert?
Yeah?
You're 16?
Uh-huh.
What's up?
I was just wondering about how, you know how last year that plane that crashed in Pennsylvania?
Right.
There was the whole deal about how the military shot it down, but then there's, like, ideas going that, you know, the passengers got up. I was just, like, wondering if you can clarify that.
I watched an hour special on this tonight, and they pretty much worked out what happened. They've got a tape of what happened, in fact.
Yeah,
they've got the audio. They got everything, and it's the passengers fought their asses off, and it sounds like they actually got those mother effers out of the pilot seat, but they throttled the stabilizer on the way out, and they have tape of these guys trying to regain control of the plane.
Oh.
And then pow.
Oh.
They had like a minute.
Our satellite like gets like New York time, and so like we're. When I'm out of school, like, all the crap that's passed that comes on in the afternoon is already gone, and I don't know what's going on.
No, you got a satellite.
Yeah.
Well, Drew and I had 3.5 channels.
Growing up.
Yeah.
I know. When I grew up, we had the 13-channel thing that clicked.
Yeah. That's such a tragedy.
Hey, the remote control was invented. I had one on a wire, on a cable. A little
really?
Box on a cable.
No. Well, listen, I had to change the remote with the pliers because the knob broke off. You remember the knobs would break off the sets?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They had a weird half circle.
Mm-hmm.
The shank that came out of the thing was like a dowel that was
yes.
cut in half.
Oh, yeah.
And it had a plastic knob, and inevitably the little part that slipped over the dowel would break. And it was too far in. You had to put your fingers in the thing. But smart people then put a pair of pliers on top of the set.
Mm-hmm.
That was nice. Get the pliers in there. Imagine how many people electrocuted this way. Shoving the needle-nose pliers in the electrical circuits. But, yeah, okay, the Pennsylvania flight.
Yeah. I watched it.
They recovered the flight recorder, obviously. They did not release.
They haven't made it public, but they showed it, the audio tape, to the families, and the families then did interviews with the New York Times. And
they
patched together what they heard.
Now, why have they not released those tapes?
Apparently, it's pretty awful to hear it.
It is.
Yeah.
And would you want to hear it?
Yes.
You would?
Yes.
Why?
It would give me some satisfaction. Because mostly you hear our people beating the F out of these people in the pilot seat. I don't want to hear that.
Really?
Yeah.
And so the terrorists took over the plane.
Yeah.
And we found out, people in the plane found out via cell phones.
The cell phones. They were all herded into the back of the plane. They took a vote what they should do.
Maybe the cell phone took the plane down, Drew.
Yeah.
You know?
Then they literally, like 20 of them rushed it. Two people were dead up front, and a guy was there with allegedly a bomb strapped to his chest.
Uh-huh.
And they decided to rush the guy with the bomb. They rushed him, got him down, apparently, and then kept going through the cockpit.
Right. And these,
and they rammed it with a cart, with a food cart, got through that way.
And the terrorists then took, you say, the throttle?
Well,
the
terrorists first
pushed the yoke forward.
First they tried to cut the oxygen off in the passenger chamber,
mm-hmm.
to try to kill the passengers.
Right.
Lovely people that these guys were.
Yeah.
Of course, at 10,000 feet, that didn't make any difference.
Right. They were flying that low.
Then they started talking about just ditching the plane themselves. Then they started praying to Allah. And then they started, fighting with the passengers and threatening to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were subdued, apparently, and then what they heard the last...
Hold on, who's Allah?
The point is, these guys, there was, it sounds like there was no humanity in these guys.
No humanity?
The pilots. They just sound like they were robots. You know, they were going to just get this mission done. They were going to kill all these people, and they were just hell-bent on it.
Yeah.
And when they got threatened,
then they got scared all of a sudden, and they'd start praying and things like, hey.
They started praying because the guys were going to break in?
Mm-hmm.
It's nice. It's a, yeah. It's a story that, I, out of the whole tragedy, was the one sort of thing that people could sort of cling to a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of...
I think, unfortunately, they've mythologized a little bit, and it's become the people of Flight 93 saved the people on the ground by being heroic, when, in fact, what they realized, if they didn't do something, they were going into the ground, so they had to rush the cockpit, because they had to. They had no choice.
Yes, but...
They did, in fact, save people on the ground. That's an outcome.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, well, it's one of these things, it's like charity in a certain sense, mm-hmm. where it's like, well, you give $500 to a charity, and yes, they benefit from that $500, and then you feel better about yourself. So it's kind of win-win, and it's probably best not to break it down. You don't want to say to a guy, oh, you just did that so you could feel good about yourself.
Right.
Maybe that's true. Anyway, the charity got a new bike for the kids or whatever it is.
But it wasn't them going, we got to get up there, or this thing's going to the Capitol building. It's like, hey, these guys are going on the ground anyway. We got to get rid of these guys.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I would expect that would be the...
Normal.
That's your motivation.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And your normal... And I'm glad that that's the way they reacted.
Yeah.
And I think the speculation that a lot of people had of sort of almost wanting there to be a conspiracy and that it was shot down by one of our planes or these guys, you know, somehow the terrorists lost control of the plane, and these guys had nothing to do with it, and all that. That kind of speculation is really, it's really just counterproductive. I mean, why do that?
Conspiracy theories are the most, some of the worst aspects of the human mind are expressed through conspiracy theories. Of all the hundreds of conspiracy theories have you heard, how many have there been?
Well, they never seem to be fully disproved, or oftentimes
they're just forgotten about because you go into another one and another one. And
yeah,
another,
but there's people that don't think we landed on the moon,
right?
And there's people who think Elvis is alive. They never apologize for them, though, and they really should. That's what I'd like. I'd like them actually apologize and to be punished. But anyway, these people. I don't know if hero is the right word, but it's all right with me to call them heroes.
Yeah.
I have no problem with that. And yes, that plane was heading for where? The White House?
The Capitol building. The
Capitol building.
And that's consistent with what we said at the opening of the show, is it's time to stand up and be adults. And that's an adult thing to do. You just accept reality and do something about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So you say the terrorists, now how did they crash the plane then?
It sounded like, apparently, that the passengers had gotten back in the seat, but the plane had become so unstable then, and then it flipped over. And it flew quite a while upside down.
Really?
Yeah.
Quite a while?
Well, I mean...
Well, how do they know?
They have eyewitnesses that saw it going upside down over the trees.
Well, over the trees, that's...
It was unstable and pretty low already, and then it flipped, and it flopped.
Well, maybe they got that from flight data recorders, too?
Probably.
All right.
XCTDA, FM, Tijuana, Baja California, Mexico.
Yeah, this morning I woke up eating my Apple Jacks. I see planes crashing into the buildings. Totally reliving what happened a year ago today, and it made me sick. I think they're using, the media is using this as propaganda to fuel our hatred.
Well, who in the media is organizing this?
That I don't know.
Or you mean there's somebody who's called all the news agencies and said, hey guys, you got to get together and play some more footage?
No, it's not. I'm not saying it's like one person heading it up. I'm just saying that I think it's cool that they want to honor the heroes and they want to... have memorials and everything, but to keep on showing the planes crashing into the buildings falling, people crying because their families were in the building and died. I mean, I almost threw up over my cereal bowl.
Yeah, it's hard to see that. It's what happened, though.
I know, but we saw it over and over and over again the day it happened. Why have to relive it a year later? It seems like it's, you know, propaganda to make us, remind us that we're supposed to hate these people. I mean, it's not like we don't hate them enough already.
But doesn't propaganda imply that somebody's sort of
fabricating something?
Not fabricating, but at least intentionally, willfully manipulating the population? Like there's some plan behind
the images?
Propaganda involves some, involves deceit and some fabrication, too. I mean, getting back to the Holocaust, the Germans were telling their people that the Jews would sacrifice, you know, the Christian babies and stuff like that. It was made up. But anyway, hey, Joey?
Yeah?
I'm not exactly sure what your angle is. I don't think I like it, but I'm not sure what it is exactly.
Well, whatever it is, it made me sick to see this over and over.
Well, I agree with that, but this is what news organizations do.
Allegations spread deliberately to further one's cause or damage an opposing cause.
All right. Look up allegations. Joey's complaint was that...
he doesn't feel good.
He doesn't feel good. And he almost brought up his Apple Jacks this morning. Listen, I have mixed feelings about the footage, but that footage is some of the most spectacular visual footage that has ever been captured in the history of time, although they probably didn't have cameras thousands of years ago when volcanoes were going off and locusts were flying and seas were parting. So maybe it's over. I'll just say, since cameras were invented.
What that ride?
Well, put it this way. How many times you seen the Hindenburg go up?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, it's spectacular footage. When I say spectacular, I don't mean good.
Mm.
I just mean, Drew, look up spectacular. I just mean it's hard to sit on that kind of footage.
Mm.
It is something that is, you know, surreal. To the extent
to the extent that the media is concerned with making you watch, it makes you watch.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And as far as the part where, you know, when people talk about the media and assume that these guys all get together and have some sort of underground meeting about their agenda once a week, that is ridiculous. I mean, these people do not know or care what each other is doing. They're betting on each other, what each other's doing, and they're trying to outdo them.
That's it. Period. I'm on Good Morning America. I can tell you how they work it.
Yes. Yeah. And furthermore, it's like saying that all the coaches from the NFL get together and try to come up with the outcome of each game before. No, they just want to beat the other guy.
Yeah, that's it.
It may end up that it looks like they're doing the same thing or that they come out a certain way. But they're just trying to win.
Now, however, though, Joey does have a point, though, which is that we tend to sacralize violence. We tend to sort of mythologize it. You know, these become bad people, bad guys. It's hard for us to see them as human beings. I punched the mic. That was good.
Yeah.
It's hard to really look at their issues and be objective. We, as a country, sort of sacralize our violence against them.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Well,
it's how we conduct wars. We don't believe those are real humans that we're going after. You know, we're going over bad people.
You're right.
And to some extent, that tends to be true, and that's when wars have sort of a moral imperative to them, and they're easier to fight.
Yeah.
But
I would, and that's true, you do that, and you have to do a certain amount of that, or you're not going to be able to get it up for war.
Right, and here's the question. Do human societies have to have a dominance pattern in order for them to survive? It's been throughout history that someone has to have been in charge. Throughout history, without exception.
Some nation needs to step up.
Whatever it is, whatever the conflicts are, somebody's got to kick a little S.
Right.
I mean, even in the French Revolution, when the people rose up, then they went out and started conquering a bunch of other people and recreating a dominance pattern.
Right.
Humans recreate dominance patterns, and that's the only time when there's peace.
Well, people say this, too. They're like... why does U.S. have to be the world's police force?
Only one that can.
And also, but with the exception of the meter maids and a lot of the happy ticket riders over there in the Burbank PD, what's wrong with the police force? I mean, don't you like a police force? Do you not want a police force in your city? Think about what your city would be like,
well,
minus a police force.
Think about the fact that this country went through a period when we thought we shouldn't have things like that. And the wheels almost came off the wagon.
What period? You're talking about the 60s?
Yeah. And
I was looking back a couple hundred years and trying to think what you're talking about, and I forgot. It was just my mom is 38 and smoking weed.
Right. Remember that? It doesn't work.
No.
It doesn't work.
All right.
Wish it did. Wish humans could do that. It'd be great.
And listen, the part, speaking of Joey's point, which is the propaganda that is caused by the news agencies, as he calls it, showing this footage over and over again, and our views toward the Taliban and some of the people that are our enemies, think about what they're brainwashed with. Those guys, they're using charcoal and writing on shovels. They don't have the internet. They don't have cable and satellite. They don't have 50 news organizations to, as Joey says, brainwash them or give them propaganda. They have what a couple of guys have who are holding a book that's a couple thousand years old, and they think we're devils. I mean, the stuff that is being fed to those people, the lies that are being fed to those people about this country, you want to talk about fueling hatred. I mean, at least we hear opposing opinions. For everybody who's saying we need to bomb Saddam, there's another voice saying why we don't need to bomb Saddam, and then we can make our informed decision on whether we need to bomb Saddam. It rhymes. I like
nice.
That.
Poetry.
Right, that's a good windbreaker. Right, that's a good bomb bumper Saddam. Sticker right there. But these people don't get an ounce of that.
Mm-hmm.
You think there's a voice over there that's saying, oh, the Americans, no, you misunderstand them. They're mostly decent people. They're caring. They're philanthropic, you know, by nature. You think there's anyone talking about that over there? And if you did utter those words over there, how fast would you get hit with 1,000 rocks? Okay. Let's
also play.
Thank you.
XETRA FM, Tijuana, Baja California, Mexico.
No.
Okay. You're sure. Let me ask you, too. I know they have weapons over there. Do they shoot rocks, or have they actually made it up to bullets at this point? Because I know rock is the main killing instrument over there. Do you think their guns shoot rocks?
They might use, like
the Flintstones, a little slingshot on a...
Yeah. Picture them. I really do picture the sort of the cops on the Flintstone, the guns they use. Yeah. What's up there, Jordan?
All right. Well, okay, about 3 years ago when I was 13, my girlfriend's dad, or her parents split up, and her dad moved to New York, and he actually died during the attack. He was in the second Trade Center Tower and when it collapsed. And me and my girlfriend have been going out for about a year and a half, like, officially. We've been friends since we were little, and ever since then, you know, about a year now, she's just been totally depressed and just totally, like, whacked out. And I just want to know what you guys think I could do.
Is she getting any treatment for this?
Treatment?
Yeah.
Yeah, she sees a counselor regularly, but, I mean, it's really not helping. I mean, we go together, actually.
Maybe it's time for her to get some medication. After 6 months... If a grief reaction is turning into that kind of debilitating depression, it can be dangerous.
Okay.
Why are you going with her, Jordan?
Well, we've been friends since, I don't know how long, like kindergarten. We're great friends. We have a great relationship. It's actually improved since last year. You know, it sounds kind of bad.
Jordan, I know you're motivated to have a decent relationship, but your girlfriend's got a serious mental health problem, and that needs to be attended to, not the relationship right now.
Okay, well, then what can I do to help her?
Get her to somebody that can prescribe medication if it's necessary, if it's appropriate.
Medication.
I appreciate you caring for her, too. I'm still, and Drew hasn't really chimed in on this issue, the part where he's attending the counseling sessions with her, sounds peculiar to me.
It's more than peculiar, but I don't blame him for that.
I don't blame him, but I'm wondering now what kind of therapy it is and why the girl's boyfriend would be attending the sessions.
I started attending the sessions for about a month now.
You what?
About a month and a half.
And what was the goal of you being involved?
She just thought that I should come and that it might help. Like me a little bit. I mean, our families are close. They're close.
And what's wrong with you? What do you need help for?
I don't know. It's just, I think my girlfriend just wanted support. And so I just felt that, sure, why not? I'll go and support her. And, you know, I mean, I felt.
And do you know what kind of therapist is this?
Just like a regular therapist. I don't know. We go in, we sit down, and we talk about feelings.
Wow. Jordan, that's a. It's crazy. It's 16, really. I mean, I didn't even know there was therapists when I was 16.
Your dad was one. Oh, yeah.
No, my dad was a like substitute school teacher when I was 16.
At that point, I see.
Yeah, I had another 20 years before he was going to do anything. Hey, Jordan?
Yeah.
All right. She may need to get on some medication, and I know you care about her deeply, but you can't make this your life's
right,
work.
This isn't your problem.
Yeah.
She needs to deal with this, and the therapist should be setting appropriate boundaries in your relationship. You shouldn't be in there, I don't think. But
can't get over that part where he's with her.
Yeah, it's not right.
Maybe it's couples therapy for 16-year-olds.
Not right.
What do you think the youngest couple to ever go to couples therapy was?
About 16, I bet. But even so, she's depressed. Her depression needs to be treated.
Yeah.
What are the goals? What's the diagnosis? What's the treatment? Not, hey, we're just kind of hanging out. I think yeah. My boyfriend will come this week. What? No way.
And Jordan seemed confused and slightly overwhelmed by the whole situation. Jonathan?
Hey, how's it going, you guys?
Good. You're 19. What's up?
Well, you know, with this whole situation with, 9/11, I mean, I can't begin to think how people expect us to be able to solve everyone's problems by this war on terrorism. I mean, give it a break, you know. You're not going to be able to fix everything. I mean, you're not going to be able to go out and stop all the crazy Saddam Husseins and
so we should just let them keep attacking us? Is that your plan?
Right.
Okay.
They're always going to try to attack us.
Well, no, just
they're always going to try to take down the Western civilization. So, you know, deal with every situation that comes up, you know, like this. Okay, we know what we need to do to fix it so that no one can do that again. Leave it at that. You know, it was a terrible thing that happened.
Well, wait a second. Let's backtrack for something for a second. We know what we need to do to fix it. Let's leave it at that.
Isn't that what we're doing?
What does that mean?
Well, just, you know, get on with your life. Don't let this run your life because you'll end up depressed.
Yes.
Like
yes.
The rest of the world.
Okay, so you're saying, I just got back from Paris and London, by the way. They seem a lot happier than we are.
Well.
All right, but anyway, you're saying our government should go about its business fighting terrorism.
No, he's saying don't fight terrorism.
No.
Stand fast. Show them. I mean, by going out, oh, yeah, we got these muscles that we're going to go out and take out all the crazy jerks, you know. I mean, that's just, you know, saying, hey, we've affected them. You know, they're actually hurting.
But
that they have to stand there and say, hey, look at our muscles. We know we're strong.
I think this is John Walker.
Right.
Yeah.
Is this John Walker?
John Walker.
No, but he drank plenty of it. Oh, listen, just for clarity, and nobody talks to idiots more than I do. I'm so fascinated by idiots and people that can't make a point. But I really, after talking to some of our listeners for a couple of minutes, I'm still not exactly sure what they're trying to say. And although Drew claims to know,
no,
he's
not.
Oftentimes wrong himself. So, Jonathan.
Right.
I still don't know what your message is. I know you want, hold on a second. I'm assuming that you want the citizens of this country to get back to the job of living their life and not obsessing over terrorism.
Yeah. Right.
No one's going to argue with you on that. But as far as the government and the armies...
We are the government. We are the government.
No, we're not really, though. I'm not making any decisions about what we need to do with Saddam Hussein. Do you understand?
If you don't like what you're...
Just listen to me, jackass. I'm not making any of these decisions. What do you want our government to do?
What I want our government to do is deal with most definite cases that we know is going to happen, like over there in Iraq. We know this guy's crazy.
All right.
We went there before. My cousin served in the Air Force there.
Okay, so we're doing that, right?
Right. We need to get rid of him. He's a crazy.
Okay, so we're doing what you want us to do.
You're right. I never would have predicted that's what he was talking about. That we should go ahead and take out Saddam.
Right.
All right.
I thought he was saying we ought to lay back and not do anything. Oh my God. Let's listen for a smoke detector.
I think we could hear there would be a smoke detector sound coming out of his ear. Press the part where you talk into the phone up against his ear.
Right.
All right. Jonathan?
Yes.
Take the part of the phone, take the receiver part and the mouthpiece part, put it against your ear. Let me see if I can hear anything. Please.
It's going to be interesting. We have to do ID right now.
No, he said 1 minute.
Huh? What?
Put that part that you're talking to against your ear. I want to see if I can hear a smoke detector. Shh. Quiet. Okay. What? All right. I was just testing. That's what I thought. No signs of life at all.
All right.
That's what I thought. All right. We got to take ourselves a little top of the hour ID break. It's just going to be about 10 seconds long. And we'll be right back in 10 seconds.
The original face seemed to rise up out of the streets.
We're back with more of the show. We're dedicating tonight's show to the attacks that took place 1 year ago today. Your feelings about those attacks, and we're trying to do it a little bit differently, and I don't think we have much choice, really, because the people that call this show are different than the people that call many other talk shows, and I'm glad about that. I really am. And we're trying to do it from probably a little less of a political angle and a little more of an emotional angle.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of young people listen to the show, and we want to know what you're feeling during this time of reflection. We'll get back to, Adam, who's 19. Adam?
Hi.
Hey.
Well, my first thought is that this was the wake-up call we needed, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, we've been lying dormant for, like, the past 5 years since we stopped a full operation in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you remind me of something, is that Clinton was on Letterman tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Or is on Letterman tonight.
He is.
Yeah.
What's that puss up to?
Mm.
Yeah, because Clinton is a guy, I mean, Clinton, besides a few missiles we were shooting on the day of the sort of Monica Lewinsky, where she was, I don't know, being deposed, that coincidentally took place on the same day as all that crap. Aside that, you know, this guy had someone try to take down the World Trade Center on his watch and doesn't seem to do a whole lot of follow-up on that. He's, I'm no political expert, but he could have done a little more. The writing was on the wall, and he wasn't too involved with weeding these people out during his reign. But anyway, Adam, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Adam?
But, yeah, because we've been lying dormant for quite a while, you know.
Yeah, but what does that mean to you, lying dormant?
Like, we've been looking at it as, like, we're the most powerful country, so.
No one would dare.
Nobody would touch us.
Right.
And, like, what happened last year was kind of a wake-up call that, you know, power isn't everything.
Right.
We're not invulnerable.
No, and you know, if you think about it, I mean, look at it this way. Their mission is accomplished in a certain sense by just what it takes to get through the airport. I mean, it's all because of them. And I don't mean them, the group, Al-Qaeda, per se, but I just mean terrorists in general.
Uh-huh.
Think of all the money. Have you heard any estimates of the money that was spent in this country on security and terrorist prevention?
No.
I mean, it's like $100 billion or something. Some of the bizarre, kind of crazy numbers that you can't even really, don't even make sense. You just know they're a lot. I mean, hey, they did not, I mean, look at it this way. The terrorists have not attacked us in 1 year. But what do you get calling, what do you call getting a country to spend $100 billion on nothing? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
How many war jets does that buy? How many bombs? How many missiles? How many social programs? How many schools? Where does that money come from? And where is it gone? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, yes.
I mean, think about it that way. I mean, I don't want to depress everybody, but there's a little bit of mission accomplished there. I mean, yeah, they could fly another plane into some monument, blow up some federal building. That still don't make it to the $100 billion mark.
Mm-hmm.
You think about what, I mean, what we've spent. I mean, obviously, some of money...
How about the trillions lost and the market drops?
Yeah, and some of the money I'm talking about is, you know, cleaning up and rebuilding and repairing and money going out to victims and all that kind of stuff. But you, if you basically, you know, did a pyramid and you had them at the top with 9/11 and flying the planes into the Trade Center, and that pyramid just went down and you had all the different blocks where all the money that was spent, all the security... I mean, just think about the money that was spent on the 4th of July and the security around that event. Just think about the money it cost to have extra fighter jets scramble up and be in the air over events, things of this nature. I mean, in a sense, they've got us to spend billions of dollars on really what amounts to be a zero.
Uh-huh.
Because once the event's over, then it's over. It's not like there's a library, a school, or a church there. All right. That's a depressing thought. Josh?
Yeah.
You 15?
Yep.
What's up?
All right. First of all, I want to say, Adam and Drew, I really respect what you're doing on you know, taking the time to do all this.
Thanks. We should get zero credit for this because there's no preparation put into it, and we would be here anyway. But we appreciate you feeling that way.
Yeah, no problem. All right. I met this guy at my school a couple weeks ago, and he actually moved here from New York after 9/11, and he actually witnessed one of the planes fly through the Twin Towers.
Wow.
Yeah, and that obviously put him, you know, through a lot of drama, you know, just really confusing, I guess. And ever since I met him, you know, he's been talking, you know, off and on, you know, just constantly, you know, 9/11 this, 9/11 that, and I really feel where he's coming from, you know. It's not like I don't care about 9/11. I just really get tired of hearing it, and I want to know if there's, you know, any nice or kind way to tell him to kind of back off about it, or should I just...
Is he a good friend of yours?
It's just kind of a guy that I talk to if I'm passing halls or if I'm talking to him in class and they have free time or basically that kind of...
Well, how about just letting him know what your feelings are about hearing so much about 9/11? Not so much trying to get him to stop, but just letting him know how it affects you.
Yeah, because he always asks me basically for advice, you know, like, should I really be worried about this that much? And I can't really answer his questions for him.
Well, maybe you can take him out and get involved in some sports or something, or some other way, some outlet.
Well, it doesn't sound like you have a lot of contact with the guy.
No, not a lot.
He's obviously got some sort of post-traumatic stress reaction that's normal from that kind of trauma.
Also, he may be trying to connect with you, and that's the way he does this.
Right.
Yeah, I took that in regard, too.
Yeah, I would be... You know, I would take a certain amount of pity on him, and then I would be flattered in some respect that he wanting to connect with you.
About something that's important to him.
Yeah, and you know what you can do sometimes conversationally? It's just, you just go ahead and move it.
Yeah.
I do that all the time. My friends try to tell me about their wives.
And you say, beat it.
No, they'll go like, well, you know, after a third child, there was a difference, you know, anatomically. I mean, I go, well, how about them Dodgers, though, huh? And we just start getting on to another topic.
Right.
It always freaks me out when guys are sort of willing to discuss intimate details with you about, like, a loved one.
Oof.
Yeah, it's always a little weird, you know? And as you get older, it doesn't happen so much anymore, but... People will volunteer things, and it's always a little weird. On a slightly varied topic here, I'm always amazed when people just bring up things that, you know, there's going to be a secondary question to, and you wonder why they bring it up at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was speaking to a woman, and she was like, this is in front of a group of about 10 people. She said, well, you know, good news, my daughter's she's received all A's in her latest marks. And I said, oh, that's great. Where does she go? Well, she's in a halfway house right now. It's a place. I see. Well, what happened? Oh, you know, she got into some drugs and ran away into prostitution, got in a little trouble, and now she's in a house. But she received all A's from her instructor. You know, it's like some guy named Stu who probably plays a guitar and wears sandals. And I'm thinking to myself as we start exploring this, well, why are we getting it? Why are we even getting into this?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm amazed that people bring up stuff they know you're going to want to finish it off with them. And then it's gonna lead to a dead end.
Oh, it's where she wants to go, though.
I'm assuming that. So Josh sounds like a decent guy. This guy sounds okay. It's going to be hard to tactfully tell him to shut up about 911, but you definitely could start steering the conversation a little bit.
A primitive sort of a reaction that people, or sort of strategy people use, is when they're having a lot of feelings, they got to let it out and put it on you.
Right.
They can't just sit there and have it, or can't enjoy any other sort of interaction with you and just have an empathic exchange. They have to take their feelings and let you have them.
Right.
Unload them on you. Download them.
Right.
And that's what that woman was doing.
All right. Let's talk to Rusty, who's 29, and I'm guessing has red hair. Rusty?
Yeah.
What's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to tell a story. I'm feeling really bad since 9/11, and... me and my friend Dutch went out to New York in October.
Mm-hmm.
And it was bad times out there, and we were drinking, and we were getting by ground zero of the World Trade Center, and some guy walks up to us. We want to take some pictures, and he led us into this condemned building that no one could get into at all.
Well, you've already lost me. He walks up to you on the street?
Yeah, we were standing outside the building trying to get pictures of Ground Zero.
Well, you were trying to get pictures. I see.
Yeah. And he said, do you want to get into this building? We got a good view of Ground Zero. You can take some pictures.
And who is he in that building? Is he a security guard or something?
A superintendent. So we pay him $10, and he brings us up there, and we're taking pictures, and then he comes up to us, and he says, you want to pay me some more money? You could take stuff from the houses. And these houses are left... you know, just how they were when these people left. They couldn't take anything, and they can't get back in at all.
Well, when you say houses, you mean apartments?
Yeah, apartments.
All right, can you turn down your radio or whatever you got going in the background there, Rusty?
Yeah.
Thanks a ton, buddy.
Sorry about that.
All right.
And
I'm more fixated on the part that your name's Rusty and your buddy's name is Dutch, and you two travel together.
Yeah, he's here right now.
Rusty and Dutch. It sounds like
the 50s.
A bad cop show from
right.
The early 80s. Rusty and Dutch. Rusty is like the red-haired studious one who always plays by the rules, and Dutch is the tough streetwise Chicago cop who plays by whose rules, Drew?
His own rules.
That's right. All right, Rusty and Dutch. So anyway, Rusty, you then took items from the houses or from the apartments?
Yeah, we were drinking at the time, and then it sounded like a good idea. We were thinking, wow, look at this. It's a free rein, and usually I don't really wouldn't do that kind of thing, but the guy just let us have free rein in these houses, so we took jewelry and stuff like that, and we're both feeling really guilty about it now. When, you know, all year we've been feeling bad, and we have a lot of stuff from these places, and I don't know. I can't live with myself now. I don't know what to do about it.
You have stuff such as jewelry.
Yeah, and, just stuff. We didn't do anything.
What other stuff?
Well, we got some, we were just thinking souvenirs and stuff. We got some ladies' panties and things like that. But
like what? What else?
What else? We got, you know, there was a purse laying. These people, it's like they left the houses and they couldn't do anything. And, you know, they couldn't take anything and they can't get back in at all. And we're in this place for $10. And, you know, we got lots of pictures of Ground Zero before this guy offered this up. And we took, you know, we got, it's just, I feel sick. We were getting, you know, we're thinking souvenirs, maybe sell some stuff on eBay as souvenirs, but, you know, that's kind of stupid of us to do that kind of thing. And I'm feeling totally guilty. I don't know what to
hold
do.
Hold on.
There's holes in
yes.
It's hard young Rusty's story. There's
little
parts of
too
it.
Much repetition.
About feeling bad?
The mantra.
I'm feeling bad.
I'm feeling totally guilty. I don't know what to do. I'm feeling totally guilty.
XETRA FM, Tijuana, Baja California, Mexico.
Now what's the part where the security guy just lets you, charges you $10 and you
and
walk
by the way,
through people's
you
apartments?
You and I both were around Ground Zero those
yes.
couple weeks after.
Yes.
There was policemen every inch. You couldn't walk out of a building with your pockets full of anything.
Yes.
You can't even walk around.
I did get some panties, actually.
No, that's you, though. You're a star.
Right.
And there was a perimeter. It was like three different perimeters.
Right.
Remember that? And police everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Rusty.
Yeah.
What street were you on?
I don't know. It was a street you walked down, and there was a fenced-off area. It was right at, you know, right if you walk past the fence, there's trucks coming out carrying these big metal things. Cops all
Whatever.
Over the place.
Cops all over the place.
And this guy just walks up. We were on the sidewalk. There was cops there. We walked in the sidewalk. He walked us under the police, the yellow tape.
All right, so listen. You got jewelry and panties and what else?
And we got a purse from his house.
All right.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it kind of makes you a bad guy.
Yeah, I know. And
all right. Well, now you know at least.
Yeah, you think I should take it back or something?
I think you should, yeah. I'm not quite sure
how
you would
do
that.
You leave it in the... You know where that building is. Can you leave it on the... like an office there? And
he doesn't know the address.
Yeah, I don't. I know where it is. I could get back there if I went back there.
I mean, there must be some way, if you sort of studied how that building operates, that you could leave... You know, just say recovered goods from this building and leave it at the office there or something.
Yeah, and then, you know, it's totally trashed. The windows were busted out. The apartments were totally dusty with
that. All right, here's what you need to do. Well, let me think about this for a second. Anderson said he'd be on the ID.
Oh, the address of the place would be on the ID of the girls, the ladies.
Yeah,
ID.
Oh, it would be on the ID of the purse that he stole. I got the feeling that Rusty's going to tell us a reason why it's not in there or on there. But, Rusty?
Yeah.
You stole a purse.
Yeah.
Was there identification in the purse?
Yeah, there was, yes.
And had the person's name and address?
Yeah.
Well, that seems like a place to start as far
good
as...
Good idea. I didn't even think about that.
That was Engineer Anderson's idea. It's not a great one, but a solid one. One that you probably should have come up with if you're looking at making reparations.
He's not. He hadn't been thinking about reparations yet, really. He just was struggling with whether he should contemplate reparations.
You still have the ID?
Yeah, it's everything's intact. We didn't really do anything with the stuff. It's just sitting in a box at the house.
Why don't you pack it up and send it back to that address?
Maybe I'll go and do that.
Do that, Rusty. Well, listen, I'm glad Rusty had a change of heart. It's a horrible thing to do. I was going to suggest if you had some belongings and you knew you could not get them back to the person that you took them from, that you should do something like sell them on eBay and
give
then
the money back to somebody, yeah.
I was going to say just take the money and go down to, like, Malibu Grand Prix or something. But you're saying donate that money?
Or you find a way to focus it. I don't know how you...
I don't know how you get it back. I don't know how you
and
get
you need
it
to make an amends, too. You need to go a little beyond.
How do you do that?
Yeah,
do you
I don't
just
know.
Beat yourself with a stick?
Well, maybe some community service or something. To some kind of giving back.
Well, it's interesting, and... it's something we should all take note of, which is you oftentimes cannot repay the person that you owe the debt to, but you certainly can repay society. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can volunteer your time, do something like that, give some money to charity. And the fact that you can't get to the person that you actually owe the debt to should not let you off the hook. Amanda?
Yeah.
You're 18?
If he really wants to make don't know.
Yes.
I'm thinking maybe consult with a
attorney. I have two comments to make before I make my main comment.
Yeah, why is he talking about...
My first one is that Rusty guy is a sick asshole.
Yes, Rusty...
From people who's already lost their houses and everything. I mean, he sounds like he got on the phone and was like, hey, look what I did, hee hee ha ha.
Well, here's the thing about... Here's the reason we didn't come down a little harder on Rusty. I wasn't so sure about Rusty's story.
Right.
His story was a little rusty. Why he's bringing up his friend's name, why he's saying... He's not saying, hey, me and my buddy were in New York. He's saying, me and Dutch.
Yeah.
Why are you saying the other guy's name if you guys did this horrible act?
Right.
There's a few holes in his story. And, yes, Drew and I were down at Ground Zero, and we could not get into that area.
No way.
We didn't try. We didn't charge the barrier or anything. But the fact that he was just kind of strolling around sounded a little bit peculiar. But anyway, go ahead, Amanda.
Okay. And my second one is, at the beginning of the story of... or show, you said something about parents dying and making the kids stronger. I am 18 right now. My father left when I was 6 months old, so I've never known him.
Yeah.
5 days after my 10th birthday, my mom died.
Mm-hmm.
2 years later, 10 days after my 12th birthday, my stepfather died.
Mm.
Just this year, my sister killed herself.
Oh, my God.
And I have to say that that has made me the strongest person on earth. I can go through anything and not think twice about it because I've been through all that stuff.
Well, unfortunately, that's not a sign of strength.
Yeah.
Being able to deny your feelings and submerge your feelings is not necessarily a sign of strength.
No, it's not that. I went through a lot of counseling with all that, but I know that I've been through that and that I know, you know, I have that obstacle to look upon, you know, to say, hey, you know, I went through this.
Mm-hmm.
I can do it. I can get over it. You know, I'm not going to make a big deal about it.
Right.
So those kids who did lose parents are going to look back, you know, especially the 63 babies that were born not knowing their parents. They're going to look back and think, you know, hey, look what, you know, look how my father and my mother lost their life. You know, I can better myself by that.
Well, I'm glad you re-brought that point up, Amanda, and I'm sorry to hear about all your tragedies. But, yeah, I do think those kids, A, financially will probably be taken care of in a little better shape than the average person that calls this show has really no financial support from the government or anybody else when these kind of things happen and the families break up or they lose a loved one. But there's also a certain sort of pride, for lack of a better word, in knowing that one of your family members didn't OD
right.
in some alley on Skid Row, but rather was involved in a tremendous tragedy. And also, I think there's going to be some compensating going on behalf of the parents that did survive that are taking care of these
mm-hmm.
children.
Mm-hmm.
So much focus was put on them in terms of getting counseling, bringing them giving them the resources that they needed to be helped and
community support
and the parent that was hopefully around to take care of them. Seems like these people are working overtime to make sure that everyone is as good as they can possibly be after something as tragic as this.
Right.
So I have a lot of hope for these kids.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about them as worried as I was would even be about one of our average callers whose mm-hmm. family breaks up and somebody passes away. Michelle?
Yeah?
You're 15?
Yeah.
What's up?
Well, I'd like to talk to you guys about how America has changed, if you think it has or hasn't.
What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that there's a different kinds of change in our maybe being in people's own feelings and experiences and outer being more as how we experience it as a country and how we deal with it.
Okay, so how do you think that changed?
Well, I guess America has upped the security and that kind of thing, but I think that it hasn't changed where I'd like to see it change. You know, I haven't been involved as much as I'd like to be involved.
And what would the change be that you'd like to see?
Yeah, I guess.
What would the change be that you'd like to see?
Well, I'd like to see more involvement with myself, more opportunities to be involved, not just donating blood, but helping people actually.
All right, well, you can go do that.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be tomorrow, but you build towards that. You're 15.
Yeah.
You got time, lots of time for that.
Yeah. And also, just that, like, I guess America, I feel like we've just kind of exaggerated our own ideas through this experience, you know what I mean?
No.
No.
No?
What do you mean?
Well, like, we, our own American ideas, you know, we have the bad guys and all that. I think we've just, through this, we've just exaggerated.
Wait a minute, they got the bad guys, that's us.
Well, yeah, I guess, but what I mean is that, like,
I should have taken my break on this call, Drew. What are you saying, Michelle? I have no idea what you're saying.
Okay, I'm just really tired right now.
Okay, I'm tired too, but this is making me more tired.
I'm sorry.
All right, well, you keep focused on that desire to give back.
Give some blood.
Good impulse.
And I know they only want you to give a pint, but give like 2 gallons.
I gave blood over the weekend.
You did?
Sat up, nearly vomited, nearly passed out.
Really?
Felt like such an idiot.
That's nice that you gave blood.
Yeah.
I don't know what blood type I have.
It's probably something common.
Well, you tell me, because they used to want it all the time.
O positive.
And they used to say that you had a type that we need.
O positive.
So, to me, I couldn't figure out whether that was a popular one or it was a little more off the beaten path.
Or a rare one, yeah.
And they needed it. But whatever it is, I got into a routine of giving it every 7 weeks or whatever the shortest amount of period that you can give in between giving it was. Then I started thinking to myself, you know, I was like, how come I can only give it every 7 weeks? And they're like, well, because it takes that long for you to replenish. And I'm like, so each time I get back up to full, I get replenished, I give you another quart, and I'm down a quart all the time? Doesn't sound like a great life strategy.
Right.
But according to my mom, it gets the lead out of your system.
Oh, no.
Oh, she's a genius. She's a genius, that one. We can get into her theories, her conspiracy theories. We'll dedicate another show to that. But here's the deal. I finally showed up there one day when they gave me they used to send me a message, you know, come. So I'd give blood. I think it was 7 weeks. It was like under 2 months.
Yeah.
Whatever the minimum was. I did it repeatedly until the time I showed up and they said, you're a day early.
Oh.
And I said, but you called me. And they said, but you're still a day early.
Mm.
And I said, I cut out of work early to come do this. And they said, yeah, you're a day early. And I said, look, either I give the blood now, I'm not coming back tomorrow. And they said, leave.
You're going to get very frustrated with the system because now there's a huge questionnaire that you fill out, right?
Yes.
And it basically is sort of trying to document how much time you spend in Africa
right.
or in the UK.
Right.
They want to document your HIV risk and your mad cow disease risk.
Right.
And I said, look, I've had 3 patients die of the Jakob Creutzfeldt disease in the last 5 years.
Mad cow?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't bother you? But you want to know how many days I spent in the UK? Yeah, we don't care that you've been touching people with mad cow disease, but how many days you spent in the UK?
Oh, I see. I see. Well, but that's a rare instance that they're dealing with you. They don't have that many physicians.
But the point is, it's a crazy system where they're just looking at ridiculous new, you know,
course.
Detail. It means nothing.
Yeah, of course. And them asking like that's going to do anything.
No, anyway. They want how many days you spent out of the country since 1980?
Oh, well, that would be easy for me, which would be Tijuana, basically, up until 2 weeks ago.
Jason?
Hey.
You're 21?
Yeah.
What's up?
What's up, Adam and Drew? Just wanted to give you guys a call. You know what this whole thing is like? It's like being a hot girl in high school. Do you remember how sometimes hot chicks in high school would have serious problems with, like, hatred and jealousy?
From other stuff.
Do you think for 1 second a hot girl would give up her looks to avoid that hatred and jealousy?
No.
And that's just like what's going on with us in America, man. We are the bomb. We're the best country in the world. And if these people think that we're going to give that up to avoid this minor setback of knocking down a building, they got something else coming.
No, I don't think they think we're going to give it up. I just think they'd like to alter it or put a little dent in it or take a bite out of it.
They can't do that because there's always going to be more buildings. There's always going to be more business people going to work, keeping the economy going. There's going to be more firefighters taking those guys' place who got, you know, who gave their life in that terrible tragedy. And no matter what happens, we'll always defend that because we'll never suck.
No, I know. And, you know, the only time this country ever really sucked is when the people in it started saying it sucked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It never really sucked. It's just a couple people, you know.
Canada sucks.
Well, Jane Fonda decided it sucked in, 1969, and then a bunch of other faggoty actors jumped on board. And before you knew it, you had a bunch of people marching saying it sucked.
Mm-hmm.
Then somehow those idiots shut up, and then it didn't suck all of a sudden. Then those people started doing blow and making money about 6-8 years later, and all of a sudden it was groovy again. Guys put on those bad Don Johnson jackets.
It's also
hiked the sleeves up and started doing coke, and then we were in good shape again.
It's like since about 1962, we decided we didn't want to grow up either.
Right.
We don't want to deal with reality. We don't want to deal with aggression. Everything's beautiful, whatever.
But here's the whole deal. The Taliban and many of these countries, they don't have a lot of distraction. This country has a lot of distraction. I mean, we have sporting events. We have events. We travel. We do things in this country that other countries don't do. And their distraction is hatred for this country.
Mm-hmm.
That's what their focus is. They become like...
We're the scapegoat.
Yeah, you see those bad movies where the guy's sitting in a cell counting the days until he can get out and exact his revenge mm-hmm. on the cop who busted him?
Mm-hmm.
These guys are in a cell. Now, when you're boozing it up, spending money, getting lap dances, going to NASCAR races and baseball games, you just don't stew that much. We don't stew in this country because we have cars. You roll the window down, you go 65 miles an hour, it's impossible to stew. You can't stew when you're moving, but it's easy to stew when you're just on your ass. And by the way, their whole religion is based on sitting around and stewing. They just sit there and stew. You know, it's like, I saw tape of the Muslim fundamentalist extremist schools that they have over there. And these guys sit on their ass and read the Quran, and they do it 8 hours a day. They just sit there. They sit
chant
on their knees, yeah. And they bob back and forth like a bobblehead doll. Write that down, Drew.
Yeah.
Osama bin Laden bobblehead. That's a moneymaker.
That's coming up at Dodger Stadium some night?
I'm going to a bar tonight. They have a pinata of Osama, and they smash the pinata.
Pinata's not bad, but the bobblehead, I think we can really move some of those units. Taliban bobble, Talibobble, fanhead. We'll work that out. Anyway, they just sit in their own funky juice, and oh man, there's got to be some funk going on, because I'm picturing like a billion cab interiors. You know, that's right. I'm taking like a New York cab and doing it times like 50 million and just putting it right in the middle of the country. Plus making it a little bit hotter and getting rid of air conditioning. But those people stew. That's what they do. Thank God. It must be nice. I think the ultimate message we could send to those people is yes, we watch these specials. Yes, we have these days, like these anniversaries, and it's on people's mind, and we dedicate shows to it and that kind of stuff. But you know what? By and large, we're too busy boozing and screwing to really give you guys a whole lot of thought. Then once in a while you do something and we turn our attention toward you for just a little bit, and then it's back to looking at cars, building houses, building skyscrapers, and going to ball games. And that's what this country's about.
I mean, Osama Pinata. We got to hit that.
Osama Pinata, yeah. Has the attendance been down at any of these events? You know what I'm saying? Or is it
last year?
Everyone mourning? Yeah, not really. People are going to ball games.
Last year, there was a while though. Remember, they canceled it for a while, and then. Well, you remember all that?
Yeah, but if you cancel a game, obviously no one's showing up. But
no, but I mean, people are afraid to go to public. You don't remember that? Going to malls, going to public events, people are scared.
I remember them canceling like some baseball games.
College football stopped.
Yeah, well,
there was discussion. Should we go to this game tonight? I mean, people,
but put it this way. Now, hold on a second. You know, Nebraska's probably sold out their last 100 football games. You think the stadium was half empty
no.
the next time they played?
Not in Nebraska, no.
Well, what's your point then?
I went to a football game that was empty. Not half. It was like, you know, poorly attended.
But yeah, but it's at the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
It holds 109,000 people, and UCLA was probably playing Fresno or something. Then it
right.
could have been poorly attended anyway.
That's right.
I'm just saying, sure, there may have been a little of that at the beginning.
Right, and then it stopped.
But it stopped,
yeah.
and people are back doing what they do.
Absolutely.
And meanwhile, our enemy stews. They just stew. That's all they do. The sun beats down. It fries their brain. They got the crazy Allah. They like to pretend it exists. They take the Quran. They stare at that. They just stew because they have nothing. And you know what they need over there? They need some blonde tail. This is why these guys are so miserable. They take their chicks, they cover them up, and they stew, and they just bob. They just bob up and down. They rock back and forth. Crazy people do that, actually, when you hold them still. Kids and crazy people, they just rock, and they just read. And by the way, I don't want to go off too far in a jag on this, but I'm not a big fan of religion, as you know that. No, and this whole thing is really... It hasn't helped my opinion on it. And don't get me wrong. I'm not a big fan of any religion. I don't like them. I don't like any of them. I just believe it creates this kind of stuff. I see the Jews over there. I see Israel going at it with the whole Middle East. I see them bombing. I see all that going on. To me, maybe I'm oversimplifying the whole thing. That's religion to me. That's what it creates. And people say, all right, but what about all the good it does? But do you have to be religious to have a good life? Is it necessary? Do you need that? You couldn't be happy without it? You would do horrible things without it? What would you do? Just kill your kids and eat them? Throw rocks at your neighbor's windows? What would you do without the ultimate cop floating above you? I think we'd be all right. Howard?
Hi, how's it going?
28?
Yep, that's me. First off, I'd just like to say it's a real pleasure to speak with you guys, and I just want to, you know, just tell you about some of my feelings about what had happened with September 11th. And I was born and raised in New York, and of course, seeing what happened was a real heartbreaker for me. And hearing some of your callers, talking about it being a real awakening, I really think it is. And I also feel that. It's an awakening where people should maybe get more involved with some of the facts going on. Like, for instance, you know, according to the World Almanac, there's more prisoners per capita here in this country than any other country. So fighting for freedom, I don't really think stays an issue anymore. And also, according...
Hold on a second. More prisoners in this country.
Yeah, that's
more right. People incarcerated.
That's right.
Right.
And we're also one out of four countries in the UN that puts its own people to death. So, according to the AP, the Associated Press, the UN claims that the United States, due to them pushing for sanctions with the UN, that according to the AP, that the UN sanctions brought on by the U.S., that there are over 50,000 children alone killed by these sanctions in Iraq each year. And just analyzing foreign policy, I think that people really have to take into account that there's a lot of angry people. I mean, you know, when you have your kid gunned down, you're looking at them, you know, missing an arm or a leg or
I know, but listen,
like
these sanctions are because there's these horrible regimes in there who would just take whatever money we give them and put it toward chemical weapons.
Saddam Hussein was on the U.S. payroll, according to the Associated Press.
No, he was the enemy. He was the enemy of the enemy. He was helping out with the Iranians.
And let me explain.
That's no conspiracy theory.
Shut up. Let me explain something for a second to all you a-holes out there who always float these theories, and some of them are more than theories about, well, we supported Saddam in the 80s, or we did this, or we did that. Okay, he was fighting against the Soviet Union and their attempt to basically take over Afghanistan. And we do this. We supported Stalin when he was trying to put an end to Hitler.
Hey, Stalin supported Hitler.
for a while.
Until 39.
Yes.
Stalin supported Hitler. You could support people and realize it was a bad idea.
Well, not only that, when Stalin, not a great guy, and I'm sure we were never big fans of Stalin in this country, but when Stalin wants to go and fight Hitler, who we backing? We're backing Stalin.
Yeah.
That's the way it works. And when Osama bin Laden was fighting the Soviets
in Iran,
in Afghanistan, yeah. It wasn't Afghanistan, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. In Afghanistan, then we supported him because he was fighting a greater evil than himself at the time, just like Stalin, when he was fighting Hitler, was fighting a greater evil than himself at the time. And that goes on and has historically gone on forever, not only in this country, but many other countries. And so when you bring up this stuff of, well, we supported, so what? We supported Stalin, and then it turned out Stalin was a bad guy, and we didn't support him. And we supported him when he was fighting a worthy cause.
But even the point is, even bad guys, everyone changes their tune depending on whose ox is being gored, quite literally. You know what I'm saying? That Stalin supported Hitler for a while because, hey, looked like it was helping Russia what Hitler was doing.
Yes. If you could have a neighbor who liked the booze and borrow your tools and never return it, and you caught him eyeballing your daughter a few times, but some mass murderer moves in down the street, you throw him your extra shotgun, and you'll go after him.
Huh.
That's what happens. Then when you do away with the murder, then you turn your sights on trying to get the shotgun back away from your boozing, ogling neighbor. That's the way it works. And listen, I know this sounds trite. It's been said many times. All you a-holes, just leave. Just go wherever you think is better and head on out. Be my guest. You're cowards, you're hypocrites, and you're pussies, and you ultimately won't do it. You'd rather stay and complain. Just go. Obviously, there are many, many greater nations than this one, in your opinion, on this planet. What about all these unjust nations that we impoverish, through sanctions? And by the way, we're keeping money from them, or we're not giving them aid. Shouldn't they be all right without us if they're such great nations? How is it that we can affect them so greatly if they're such great nations? But whatever nation that you're worried about, just head over there and get involved. They're going to need help. What line was this, A-hole on?
XZDA, FM, Tijuana, Baja California, Mexico.
Yeah, I was...
Head abroad and start helping.
Hey, I was telling you that with the World Court, with the UN, the only condemned country for terrorism is the United States, and also with East Timor, there's no military there. And we sold over 90% of the arms that escalated under Clinton's administration to Indonesia, who also helped...
Well, why would you stay in a horrible country
like
this?
Yeah, why do you want to live here? Go help.
Well, I'm a little bit stuck here, but I
think... Why are you stuck here?
Go abroad and
go
help.
Go somewhere good.
I'll tell you one thing. I love the people here. I love the land here.
I always love
the decisions made by the government. And I don't really see you doing a lot of things, and also some of the statements you make are a little bit on the crass side to me.
Good. Kiss my ass. I don't care. First off...
Fly me out there. I'll kiss your ass.
First off, I'd like to fly to Yemen.
But didn't you just get back from Europe?
Just get the hell over there and start helping these people that we've affected through sanctions.
I can. I love New York. I don't think a lot of the political decisions being made by especially ex-CEOs, I don't think it's the best decision for the people here, and I think that people really
should
analyze it.
All right, listen, Howard, here's the real topic. Howard, here's the topic you need to focus on. Here's the main topic you need to focus on.
I think I know what I need to focus on.
Why is a guy who's above average in the intelligence department, why can't he figure out how to make a buck or get laid? That's your number one topic.
I make $200,000 a year, so I'm doing fine.
Oh, and you can't fly yourself out here to either kiss my ass or go back and help your people abroad?
Your love it or leave it attitude, that's not one that I share. I love
it. Of course, because you're a hypocrite.
No, I love
a hypocrite.
I love the people.
All right, then shut up.
I don't love all the decisions made by the government. I think that's
okay. Well, who cares?
I don't love all the disabled people.
Neither do I. I got problems with my
car.
Oh, but you shut up. So who said you had to love?
I don't want any more 9/11. Who said that to happen? And if you really care and you have anxiety, do something to help raise awareness.
Well, first off, I don't have anxiety.
Well, I was
That's
talking
me,
about
I do.
Drew, man.
Number two, how do you raise awareness? What's your plan for raising awareness?
Well, you can form unions, you can form social groups, you can get together and speak with people, try to take action, be involved with...
What kind of action? What action?
For instance, I'm with the Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty, which is mainly sticking here. I mean, I think it's a pretty racist system for the most part. And also, you know, Bush, the president now, has killed more people under his regime with being governor of Texas than any other governor ever in history.
Right.
So I think people need to take things into that account. So I'm trying to act, you know, in a local way and for this country. I'm not a big WTO fan. A lot of the things that are going on with the WTO now, if you're a member of that, which over 130 countries are, then you have to abide by the
World Trade Organization?
Suffer sanctions yourself. Now,
all right. What do you do for a living?
I work with the Associated Press.
What do you do?
Well, I'm going to keep that.
Yeah. How do you make over 200 grand a year?
Why? Why are you so interested? You want a job?
I don't believe you. That's why.
Well, you don't have to believe me.
All right. Good times, everybody.
Hey, good talking with you guys.
All right. Take care. Can't afford a ticket out of the country. How can he have all this money? But I know he ain't getting laid. I'd love to see the car. I don't know what kind of car you drive, Howard.
His car.
Those guys like that. You know their main problem with guys like Howard? Gay and don't know it. That makes you angry. You have a craving for penis, but you try to ignore it. And then you end up getting involved with all these groups. All these guys are involved with all these groups. They're homo, and they don't know it. And it makes them angry. It makes them bitter. I mean, imagine if you were forced to go through your whole life and you really wanted some penis, but you couldn't have it or you denied yourself. See, you know how happy the gays are? They're happy people. And why not? They've realized their goal. They wanted some penis and they got some penis. But think how angry the guys are that need it, that deny themselves it. That's what these guys all are. What is that, Drew?
Well, I got the angry part. I guess it certainly heard anger.
Yeah. It's anger, but the thing that's funny about the...
Well, the angry at authority. Whatever it is, it's no good.
Yes.
Anybody
the Howards of the world, I think they hate their dads, or maybe their moms were over-domineering, and that's part of the thing that turned them gay. At least they don't know it. I don't want to break Howard's heart, but... yes, they're angry at authority. And the thing that's funny is they're angrier than anybody, but yet... They're always talking about helping people, but yet they're the most angry people in the world. And they can never get laid. I think that's part of what makes them so angry. Steven?
Yeah, how's it going?
Anyway, I just hate guys like that guy, Howard.
I loathe them.
They're all, you know what they are, too? They're just one big statistic.
Well, they're also the ones that are going to tell you how to live.
Right.
And that I find, whenever anybody starts telling you how to live, you gotta be careful.
Ironically, they're worried about the oppressive nature of our government, yet it's these jack-offs that want to tell you what to do.
But see, that's the point. If you and I really didn't like what was going on here, we wouldn't tell them what to do. We'd go somewhere else. That's why we're incredulous that if you feel that bad about this,
just pack it up.
Better
yet, like I said, you're someone like Howard who wants to make some change against some of these countries that we're affecting with our oppressive regime.
Go help them.
Go start handing out blankets and bandages. God bless you. I'll respect somebody who does that. Go ahead, Stephen.
Hey, I just wanted to call, and I think you guys are doing a great thing by, readdressing the topic about 9/11 and the one-year anniversary, I guess.
It was an original idea Ann had about 2 weeks ago.
You guys really broke the mold, but...
Yeah.
Well, as Engineer Anderson probably said, I am private first class in the Army. I was over in Afghanistan. I got back last month.
How long were you there for?
I was there for about 3 months, from the beginning of May till the beginning of August.
And what were your impressions of it?
It's different. The things there, like, the things we were fighting for,
getting rid of Al-Qaeda and all that. I mean, that was great. We really liberated a lot of people. We helped them out. They're having a really hard time. But the government that's there now, I think, is really too weak to stand on its own. So we're going to have to keep our troops in there for a while longer.
Oh, well, that's, I think that's a foregone conclusion.
Yeah, I mean,
not maybe not us, but there will have to be stabilizing forces there for a long time.
Yeah, they have no way of keeping it together since it's such a new government. I mean,
yeah, they just shot like the vice, whoever, who boss over there, what do they have? But I was going to say president, but I'm not sure if that's what they call them. There was an assassination attempt on
the
president,
wasn't
right?
Like a week ago, a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, maybe just a week ago.
Do you want to talk about something sucky about this country? How about the fact that we pay the enlisted guys? Are you enlisted?
Yeah, I'm enlisted.
We pay them the same as a 7-Eleven clerk to go over there and risk their life. And then if they die, they get like, their wife gets $5,000 a year.
They get less than the 7-Eleven clerk.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying? There's something to complain about.
Yeah.
But let's complain about something there.
Yeah.
Yeah, if we die in action, then the government will pay our families 6 months of our pay as we were.
I mean, right. That there to me is a weakness in the fabric of this country, right there.
Drew always said it should be 8 months instead of six, but
9.5.
Always said 9. What are you pulling down a month as a private?
I'm a first class Army Rangers, so I also live off base, so I make about $1,400 a month.
That's
another $900 for like bonuses for living and.
For surviving?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, that's not too bad.
Could be worse.
Yeah.
Could be worse.
Yeah, it's decent. You know, it's livable.
All right. So you're over there, and did you see any action? What were you doing over there?
We were generally just kind of hunting out the last of the Al-Qaeda, kind of keeping the peace around, making sure everything was all right. My particular squad, we came under fire a few times.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't anything major. It was like, I don't know, one or two radicals that just decided they didn't want us there anymore. But, you know, they weren't really a threat.
Who did you find these people were mostly, the Al-Qaeda and the Taliban types?
There were a couple, like, in the major cities, like, where there were lots of people. But they were mostly just kind of spread out. Like, you'd find a couple in caves every once in a while. Mm-hmm. But most of the caves have already been blown out by the bombing raids, so.
Right. Did you have any sense of who these guys were or what their, I mean,
we knew,
made them tick?
We knew a couple of groups of them were just some Al-Qaeda followers that were, I don't know, just kind of fed up of the U.S. invading their country and getting rid of all their leaders and all that. But there were, like, a select few that were actually part of the sects of Bin Laden's, like, actual terrorist groups. We're still functioning.
Well, thanks for calling, Stephen. We hadn't spoken to any enlisted people yet, and it was almost 2 hours into the show. Drew, you know what I was thinking?
Hmm.
Like, remember when we were kids, whoever we were fighting, that was the accent and the skin color of the villain in the cartoons?
Well, that happened right on through the 80s, it seemed like.
Yeah. I don't know if they can do that anymore. Can they do that? I mean, are newer cartoons going to have Arab-looking guys as the villains?
No, I don't think that's done anymore.
No, I don't think you can do that.
Uh-uh. It's got to be the Johnny Quest approach.
Ooh.
It's sort of a mixture.
It's now half-breeds that are doing this stuff? Okay, interesting.
Well, yeah.
Michael?
Yeah.
You're 14?
Yeah. I think it's kind of dumb, like, about my school, we have this type. Today, since it was 9/11, there was this whole stupid thing about wear red, white, and blue. I mean, they're making this all a holiday. Shouldn't it be like a mourning, you know?
Well, I think it's a way to pay respect to the people that perished during this attack, and it's also a way to pay your respects to this country. And I think that's why they'd ask you to wear the red, white, and blue.
Were things too upbeat or something at the school?
No, I just think it, like a more of a morning type thing where maybe more darkish, right? I'm no goth or anything.
Wear a red, white, blue armband or something.
You like them to dim the lights at the school? Or...
Like, you know how a basketball game, I know, Adam, you like basketball.
Sure.
Yeah, well, how if one of their players dies or someone
right.
special dies, they got a black little
thing right.
on their jersey.
Sure.
How about something like that instead of a...
Right.
You know,
too much color, huh?
Well, yeah. It's interesting, and that's normally... It's kind of an interesting point that Michael brings up, which is normally that's the way we deal with that sort of stuff.
Yeah, why are we getting colorful this time?
And
it's almost a compensation. It's so awful. I mean, to you know?
Yeah, but in a way, I think what it's saying is instead of mourning everyone's death, we'll celebrate the life that they had.
Right. It's
and we'll celebrate this country.
That they should not have died in vain is sort of the feeling, I think.
Yes, and we're not going to fold like a taco
mm-hmm.
that we're going to enjoy our freedom that much more. We're going to enjoy our families that much more. I'm going to enjoy calling people gay on the radio that much more.
I'll tell you what, I'm glad that I had been in New York a couple weeks after the event, too.
Yeah.
Because some of those, what is the name of that damn highway that's sort of towards, I can't remember the name of it, but it's an old, old highway. A lot of bridges and a lot of sort of rock walls and stuff. And I remember every bridge overpass had flags and signs and wishes. I mean, thousands and thousands. And going into those subway stations and seeing the missing signs, I mean, thousands of pieces of paper with people
mm-hmm.
desperate trying to find someone. And then going way downtown and looking at all the art and the expressions that people put on the walls. Remember all this?
Yes.
And one really struck me, which was probably a sort of a second or third grade picture of a large poster that clearly one kid had drawn with the World Trade Towers on a cloud with the towers having wings.
Oh, like angels
sending
up into the heavens.
It was just sort of something I'll always remember all those, the wishing, the patriotic, what is it, the coming together
mm-hmm.
that you could see, the desperation expressed by the people putting the pictures of the people that are missing on the walls.
Right.
And then the outpouring of artistic expression.
Mm-hmm.
Remember all that? And no one will ever see that again because it all just sort of washed away.
Yeah. I was, I believe you were in New York
a week later.
1 week later, and I was there a few
weeks. 2 weeks. Yeah,
it was 2 weeks later. It was not for philanthropic reasons. We both had business, and we just decided, well, let's just keep going and do whatever business we have to do.
Huh.
And we both ended up going out there, and so we were there in a unique time and period
Jesus.
In history.
I also remember seeing the people, the look on people's faces as they would pile out of the subway stations. It was sort of manic-y. Everyone looked different.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone. And yet not in a hostile or aggressive way. People like very like we were all on the same ship together. People were extremely
right.
nice for New Yorkers, but they had sort of a wild look in their eyes. They were all just freaked out.
Yeah, and probably dazed.
Dazed and it was like dazed and meets freaked.
Say confused.
Confused.
Because I could think of the Zeppelin song in the movie. All right, Drew, what do you want to do?
You want to just give some more final thoughts? We're almost done here.
Yeah, I feel bad for
all right, take Shalane.
Poor people have been on hold for a million years. Shalane?
Yeah.
You're 20?
Yep.
You think 9/11 brought the youth closer in this country?
Well, you know, I think in the past, most of our parents and grandparents have all grown up with pretty major wars, you know, Vietnam or World War II. And
right.
I think that the youth of America, at least as far as I can tell when I was growing up, we really didn't have anything to really give us a pride for our country. I mean, in high school, tons of kids would, you know, wear shirts, America sucks, or, you know, would talk about how they'd never, ever go into the military and how people who do that are just losers and don't have any dreams for their lives.
No, it's a very good point, which is it was very uncool to be patriotic.
Yeah.
And there was a time in this country where it was important to be patriotic, I always just look at in terms of what gets you laid and what doesn't get you laid. And there was a time when being a veteran of World War II, being a hero, was cool.
Yeah.
Shut up, Drew. But being a veteran of certain other events or certain times in this country, it was uncool. And yes, when I was in high school, it was sort of a geek, and it was corny to do any flag waving. Especially before that, in the 70s.
Forget it.
You were almost, could you have gotten laid in 1976 in your high school, 1974, wearing a red, white, and blue sweatshirt and walking around talking about the government, how great it was?
You would get your ass kicked.
You get your ass kicked. On any college campus in this country. And I'm glad that this has infused a little patriotism into the youth of today, and hopefully it's something that'll stick around.
The other thing, it's we're so diverse. Who do these guys want? They want white guys in blue suits, or you know what I mean?
Well, that's the whole thing.
They're attacking the world when they
Drew was talking about hitting L.A. You're just going to get your own and Mexicans.
And
who do you think you're going to get?
Right, Vietnamese. And
if you're lucky, you get a few of it. You get a few Vietnamese.
Right.
If we're lucky. Oh, wait, Drew, please. I'm saying you bomb L.A., you don't get it. You don't get whitey.
You get the United Nations.
You kill 3,000 people, there'll be one blue eye. Just one. Some of them are like, there's one guy who's like a Malamute. He's got the brown one and the blue one. Yeah, I swear they must know this. I don't think they'll ever F with L.A. They'll just kill 2,500 Mexicans.
They look, New York's that way, too.
And we want more in here. We'll go, oh, geez, that's rough. Let's get Los Lobos to do a song, and let's get back to business.
All right.
Edward James almost will come out. We pop a little bit. Los Lobos to do the song. We'll get back to business. Okay. Well, that's it for the 9/11 show. I imagine we'll do one next year.
Yeah, you're probably right.
All right. Same time, same place?
Yeah.
And we're going to do other shows in between the 9/11 show, so yes, sir?
Yeah, starting tomorrow, Janine Garofalo, and then Disturbed, out in David Allen Greer. Got a lot of Boston's.
Good times. So, until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Dr. Drew saying mahalo.
This has been Love Life. The opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, sponsors, or this station. The producer for Love Life is Ann Wilkins-Dingle. Love Life is a presentation of Westwood One Entertainment.